Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News.
From high atop the Milkpacking District in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon, this, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all-important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
Portland police have a standoff with a man with a rifle. 13 people are dead because of tainted cantaloupe. And it's National Coffee Day.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed, for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Thursday, September 29th, 2011. A man surrendered to police early Thursday morning after reports of about 6:30 p.m. Wednesday that he'd pointed a rifle out his apartment window near Jeldwen Field in southwest Portland. Police crews cordoned off an area at 16th and Yamhill and called in a negotiation team. The incident also shut down max service throughout the area. Portland officers were dispatched to the apartment after a woman called to report a man pointing the rifle out his window. It was the same man who prompted a police response several times in previous days. John L. Griffin was booked into the Multnomah County Jail. He's expected to appear in court later today, and steps are being taken to provide mental health treatment for him.
So in case you were wondering, the number of times you can point a rifle out a window and threaten people, three.
Yes.
That is three, by the way.
It's the third point rule.
There you go.
I don't know. Police say they had several encounters with Griffin prior to the late Wednesday episode. On September 22nd, police were sent to the apartment complex after callers reported a man with a rifle wearing a ballistic vest who was saying, quote, "We are under siege." That man was Griffin. Griffin went back into his apartment and spoke with police by telephone, who determined that he had calmed down and was going to bed.
So he was no longer under siege. He was only mildly.
Right.
All right.
And apparently, as long as you put the rifle down and just go to bed, the police will not interfere in your brandishing.
Well, I mean, it's not illegal to have a rifle. Not illegal to say you're under siege.
No. They said he had not committed a crime.
I mean, none of those things, I mean, separately. You know, it's not until you mix the sugar and the eggs and the milk together and make the cookies that you get into the issue.
So that incident was documented as a man with mental health issues. On Tuesday of this week, police went to the complex again on complaints Griffin was screaming out his window while wearing a gas mask and a ballistic vest.
That is awesome. See, I like that part of it, though. Like, I would totally do that. I should do that. I've got a gas mask.
It's not illegal because, once again, he was written up with mental health issues, and they said, now, sir, stop screaming. And
I've got
said,
okay. Now, look, I've got a window. I got a gas mask. I got grudges.
Yeah.
I got beef. So, I mean,
you
hey.
You got folks on your street that could probably use some screaming at.
FYI. No.
They will keep the hobos from pooping in your driveway if you regularly scream at your window wearing a gas mask.
I'm not even going to wait till I get home. I'm just going to do it from the rooftop here. Okay. I'm going to lean off the rooftop in a gas mask just going, you know, we're under siege, and just wait and see what happens.
That will be the moment, by the way, that Bill Oakley just looks out his window across the street and then just sees you waving your arms, wearing a gas mask, screaming on the roof.
And he's just sort of, you know, with the Venetian blinds, closes.
I don't know him.
Emerson, no, it doesn't sound familiar.
I've never met him.
No.
Before they were called out on Wednesday, police were formulating a plan to remove him safely from the apartment. That effort included collaboration with his family, friends, and the Bureau's mobile crisis unit. But before they could act on that plan, Griffin reportedly pointed a rifle out the window, threatened several people, and then retreated into his apartment. So now they've decided that he has now indeed committed a crime.
Yeah, you can't.
Because you can't threaten people. That's the thing. You can point the gun, you can scream, you can wear the gas mask, you can't threaten anyone.
No.
That's the thing. So now he's someplace else.
I'm just going to be at home rifling through some things.
No.
Bang.
Yeah.
All right. So there you go. So there's that guy. Well, look, you know, we can't be gruntled all the time. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Thursday, September 29th, 2011. Thank you for joining us. Coming up later on this hour, you got your Science in the March. It's coming up toward the bottom of the hour. And later on, your entertainment news. The Rick Emerson radio program will be gracing your ear holes next hour at RickEmersonShow.com. Today, Taser Watch, Peanuts Watch. We'll talk about the most recent episode of Sons of Anarchy, Season 4, Episode 4, and more. So that is all of the way. Oh, and plus the you don't even want to know. Well, here's the thing. You don't want to know, but you're going to know if you're listening next hour anyway. I'm not trying to, like, leverage everybody. I'm just saying. We don't really have time for it here. But I wake up to a lot of disturbing things on my phone. You know, like, a lot of times, like, sometimes, you know. Anyway, I just woke up this morning, and I, you know, and I did what I always do. I just turned off my alarm, and I compulsively, like, just checked my email just to see, like, you know, if...
If anyone had said anything about you anywhere?
Yes, exactly. That's exactly. To see if anyone in the world is mentioning me, Rick Emerson. Yeah. No, I just checked my phone to see if, you know, like, maybe a guy nearby is holding a gun, if I shouldn't leave the house, if maybe a man in a mask is telling me we're all going to die. I just woke up to the most unsettling email this morning, and then there's a visual aid with it as well. So,
nice.
There you go.
Thanks. So I have, like, I get a whole, like, hour and a half now to just
dread,
you know, the rest of my day.
It has to do with one of the following things.
Is it, okay, is it more disturbing than the random photo I just got from Jim Willig yesterday that involved some kind of strap with...
It's strap for your junk and then...
Things, which I have no idea. He just randomly just sent that to me as if he thought I was shopping for such things.
It was like an athletic supporter combined with, like, the... Like the schlong ring,
yeah,
to sort of prolong your arousal.
And he sent me a photograph of it on my phone and said, "We have these in stock."
Yes, they're in bulk, Don.
Well, okay then. So yeah,
it's disturbing in a similar way.
All right.
Anyway, so we'll talk about that next time. That's at RickEmersonShow.com. Right now, though, you're listening to Cascadia.fm. Here's Don Taylor.
Panera Bread's experiment in pay what you want retail has been successful at its first two restaurants in St. Louis and Detroit, taking in about 80% of the retail price of the food they serve. We talked about this several months ago, by the way, that they were going to be opening one here in Portland.
Is that that place that's in Cedar Hills Boulevard, on Cedar Hills Boulevard?
I'm not sure where it is. But the basic idea is that if and you don't have enough money to pay the full retail price, you can say, here, this is what I actually have. I will give you a dollar for this fine sandwich.
Or you can get a job, hippie.
Well, yeah, the ones in St. Louis and Detroit, very successful. They serve as shining reminders of the fundamental goodness of people.
yeah.
Until recently, the third restaurant that they opened here in Portland was faltering, not attracting enough paying customers and losing money.
It's hard to believe.
It turns out, says the writer here
people
who wrote this
bastards.
Piece. Turns out that people in Portland just like to eat free food and hang around and not leave.
Now, am I thinking of the same... Where is the one here in Portland?
I don't know where the pay what you want one is. I think it was on Burnside.
Well, wait, so
somewhere downtown, I think.
So there's more than one location in Portland, but only one pay is...
Right. There's a whole bunch of Panera Bread locations.
Okay, so I am thinking of the right restaurant, just not the right location.
Yeah.
There's one across from Powell's in Beaverton, at Cedar Hills. And it's sort of like, it's like there's Powell's and there's like a... I don't know, like an Apple store there, and like a bunch. Yeah. I don't know, a bunch of really like white things there, and then there's this bread store,
right?
Or not a bread store, but it's called
Panera Bread, and
like a deli kind of place.
They make their own bread. They have lots of pastries.
Yeah.
They have sandwiches and soups and stuff. They actually, for a chain restaurant, the quality of the stuff is really actually very good.
It was not bad,
but yeah. So, but they discovered that, like, you know, that Portland might not be the best place to do this. In the Midwest, people actually pay for their food. Here in Portland, not so much.
People in Portland are jerks.
While the point of the eatery is to help people out, the experiment was never intended as a homeless shelter. The business model depends on attracting customers who will pay retail for their meals and some who will pay a little extra. Then, and I guess that they will make up for the people who don't. And like
who
I said,
pays extra so that some freeloader can come in and nosh on my dime?
In St. Louis and Detroit, apparently, people did that.
Well, in Detroit. I mean, in Detroit...
Yeah.
But the question in Detroit is, who is paying full price at all in Detroit? Like, and who did they rob to do it?
So Panera founder Ron Shaich told the Portland Tribune, "We had to help them understand that this is a cafe of shared responsibility and not a handout. It can't serve as a shelter, and we can't have community organizations sending everyone down for free food." The Portland Panera Bread has now hired a community outreach manager who will gently prod diners who have overstayed their welcome to leave.
Okay. Maybe it would be easier just to charge money for things.
Say, hey, you know something, it's not going to work because Portland is a town full of freeloaders.
Well, and people in Portland are usually just so stoned or thick that they don't take any hints. You know, it's like Starbucks. We've talked about this. The Starbucks, they have those Starbucks hobos that come in. And, like, a guy buys a bagel and then sits there for 5 hours sponging the Wi-Fi. You know, yeah. It's not like there are people, like everybody's rolling in money. I understand that. But by the same token, it's like you can't just, you can't just be a leech, forever and expect people not to sort of take umbrage at that.
Yeah.
Like, you got to not be just a jag-off about the whole thing.
Sir, you've been using this place as your... and it's not even just... you say hobos, but when I worked at Starbucks, we would have guys that would come in and just basically use it as their office.
Right.
And they would sit in the corner...
Oh, I don't mean actual hobos.
Yeah, and drink a cup of coffee and spend three hours, doing their graphic design emailing. And
I'm not talking about real homeless guys. I'm just talking about, people... This is a term that I heard used at a Starbucks recently, where the barista were talking about Starbucks hobos. And I went, homeless guy? And they said, no, it's just some dick... Some white-collar dick who comes in and just sits putting together his PowerPoint presentation all day because he ordered a small chai tea this morning. And he's still there this afternoon, working on his Excel, presentation for whatever. And it's
have Wi-Fi at the library. Taking up space that somebody could be buying something.
That's the thing. And it's not like I'm being some hard-ass Republican about it or whatever, but it's for the same reason you shouldn't be just a tool with the take-a-penny-leave-a-penny thing. Just because there's no point in just being a dick
leave the penny.
If you're going to be a dick on a grand scale, genocide scale.
Yeah.
Be
Dick Cheney.
Don't be the guy who screws me out of 3 cents in the skull tin at the Plaid Pantry. That's just mean, is what that is.
Right.
It's not conscionable, Don.
No.
It's not.
We do not approve.
No. And also, those guys are blocking. If you're just some load just sitting there at Starbucks, you're in my way, more to the point. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Is you're taking up space that could be used for me, Rick Emerson. And that really is the larger issue here. Anyway, so Panera. So community outreach people, they come and they gently prod.
Yeah, I guess they're going to have to hire somebody who's basically a bouncer.
You there, move along.
Yeah. Don't care where you go, but you can't stay here.
At some point, do they just call the cops? They must. That's the thing. It's the bottom line is eventually they have to call the cops. If you just go, no, thanks, I'm staying.
I guess they could, sure.
It's like when they say in schools now that they don't do corporal punishment in schools, but I don't see how they get around it. If some little cretin just, says, no, I'm not moving. Eventually you got to pick him up.
You're going to have to manhandle him sooner or later.
Yeah, he's got to be grabbed and dealt with, one way or the other.
Yeah.
So you got to get a guy who comes in and just...
Even if you're just going to place him, out in the hall.
In a box on the corner.
Yeah.
Just ejects him physically. Mm. All right. Well, anyway. Hello, it's the, It's the 29th of September, Thursday. This is Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Here is Don Taylor.
A young girl in Prince William County, Virginia, was rushed to the hospital with alcohol poisoning after she drank hand sanitizer in her second grade classroom.
Ugh.
The girl's father is outraged and says there are still questions about what exactly happened.
He's outraged at who?
I don't know.
His own defective sperm?
I guess. Glenn Grant said he has trouble understanding what happened to his 7-year-old daughter, Christy. She's feeling much better now, but had a harrowing Tuesday afternoon at school. He said, she gave us a story that somebody dared her. She did the dare. Under supervision, this would never have happened.
How would you even drink hand sanitizer? I don't think that doesn't even seem possible. It seems like your throat would close up before you were even able to ingest enough of it.
Well, Grant's fiance, Ashley Washington, says, they're telling me it was a couple of pumps of hand sanitizer, maybe one or two. The doctor's telling us there's no way it was two pumps because her blood alcohol is so high. According to the paperwork from the Potomac Hospital emergency room, Christy suffered from alcohol poisoning. Grant said she doesn't remember anything from 3 o'clock until she woke up, which is after 7. He said Christy was unconscious and unresponsive when she was rushed from school in an ambulance and even stopped breathing at one point. Grant said, I send my child to school every day with the faith that my child will come back healthy. They will be properly supervised, which did not happen. No explanation from anybody.
You're putting your faith in the wrong system, sir. Life is a zero-sum game. People are born, people die. Look, you send your kids out, I'm just saying to all parents everywhere, can we just address a fact right now? You send your kids out into the world every morning, some of them aren't going to come home. That's just how it goes. That's just the way the dice are set in this particular game.
And honestly, you know, if you're a teacher and you've got, you know, 30 kids in a classroom, there's no way you can keep an eagle eye on every single one of them every minute of the day. I mean, we weren't supposed to be eating paste when we were kids. And we all, you know, at least tried it. There were always those weird kids that liked it way too much and kept eating it.
Well, your parents weren't outraged. They just said, well, my kid's a retard. What do you want?
Yeah.
He eats paste.
He came home, they said, don't do that, and smacked you upside of the head.
Not everybody can be a surgeon.
No.
So, you know.
And honestly, even at the age of 7, if you're guzzling hand sanitizer, there's more going on there than just, like, a dare.
Yeah. Well.
This is nature trying to weed your child out of the pool.
That's what I'm saying. It's just, you know, like, the squadron goes out. You know, the squadron comes back. Not everybody returns the same way. That's just how it goes.
There are dozens of top secret pictures, by the way, of Osama bin Laden that the government...
Are these the hot nude photos that I've been promised from his cell phone?
Oh, heavens, yes.
They should totally... Oh, my God. For propaganda purposes, totally make him, like, pouting and, like, pursing his lips and, like, sticking his tush at the, like, out, like, Scarlett Johansson style. Yeah. And then just do it, ooh, who's a pretty Osama? And then just, you know, and then taking his own photograph. Oh, my God.
Why not?
Somebody make those and, like, leaflet those over Saudi Arabia right now. That's a great idea.
Well, these, unfortunately, I don't think are that sexy. Oh. These were taken during and after the raid that killed him. Chris Farrell with...
They should show him with one ball just to be, like, just to screw with him. One ball, real, just a tiny, tiny little schlong.
Wearing fishnets,
frilly
and
pink
high
under things,
high heel shoes,
totally like pink polka dotted undies.
Chris Farrell with Judicial Watch tells us it wouldn't cause any great harm to release them.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is what cut is this? Pictures. Hold on a second. Let's see.
It also sends a message to those that would try to harm us in some way that we will pursue you across the ends of the earth and over years to bring justice. So there's a very strong deterrent message.
And then we will
believe.
Photoshop one of your balls right out. You're going to replace it with...
And show you in Hello Kitty panties.
Totally. Just the other half of your sack just like a windsock.
Well, today is National Coffee Day, the happiest day of the year. Deals are offered at some chains on a cup of coffee. This morning, 7-Eleven promoted an offer for a free medium cup of coffee, cappuccino or latte, from 7 to 11 a.m. So you already missed that, so don't go there. On the other hand, if you get yourself to a Krispy Kreme, they are launching their new coffee blends by offering a free 12-ounce cup of house blend coffee. The National Coffee Association of the USA keeps stats on who drinks coffee and how much, and they say that consumption by 18 to 24-year-olds went up 9% this year. So the youth of today, drinking more coffee.
Excellent. Good for them. That really is the only way we can stay productive and competitive in these trying economic times. We need more stimulants given to our young people. Stat. That does tell you everything you need to know about 7-Eleven coffee, by the way. The fact that they're charging, like, effectively giving an equal price today for all of those, you know, for what is it, their coffee and their what?
The cappuccino and the latte stuff. It comes out of a machine.
It's all out of one tube.
Yeah.
Just all out of one big bucket underneath the counter. That's
it's
all.
Not terrible, though. It's just that I found that I will, and it's cheap. So that's the thing, is that I have found I can actually create myself a decent coffee drink, but I have to do things like... The stuff out of the machine is way too sweet, and of course it's not caffeinated enough, but a number of the 7-Elevens have those little free extra shots of caffeine that you can add. So I'll like make the cappuccino, but I'll add like several extra shots of the free caffeine, then I'll fill like about a third of it up with the extra caffeinated house coffee.
Yes.
And it ends up making a very delicious coffee drink that costs about $1.50.
When I worked at 7-Eleven, the French roast that they introduced when I was working there was actually not bad at all. It was, I mean, in terms of, you know, in terms of just coffee. Because, you know, and also the bar is set really low because I grew up just drinking, like, you know, Uban or some crap. And it was, just, you know, just...
We were Folgers people at my house.
I think it might have been Folgers. I think it was whatever was on sale. I think occasionally it was, like, the Safeway, you know, like store, you know, like townhouse store brand or whatever. And it was just... so it was just dreck in a can. And so everything today tastes good, you know.
But also, if you figure out how to make yourself a highly caffeinated and still tasty drink for, like, $1.50... at 7-Eleven, it makes it really, really hard at that point to go to a coffee kiosk or a Starbucks and pay $5 for a similar tasting cup of coffee.
That's why you apparently have to balance it out by staying there for 12 hours and leeching their Wi-Fi.
Get your money's worth.
Yes.
Well, this morning, The Onion's Twitter feed started churning out items about a phony hostage situation in which Republican members of Congress were threatening school children.
Awesome.
The tweet said things like, breaking, Capitol building being evacuated, 12 children held hostage by group of armed congressmen. Then they pimped a story they had, Congress takes group of school children hostage. Then they followed that up with a tweet, police helicopter just ordered to pull back after Representative Trent Franks tried to take it down with a shotgun. Anyway,
did someone take that story a little too seriously, Don?
Yeah, apparently for some people who actually work in the Capitol, who all they know is that there were things on Twitter saying that the Capitol building was being held hostage.
Or not even that, if they heard a guy in the next cubicle yell something that he saw on Twitter, and they didn't even really get a chance to see it themselves.
Right.
All they heard, Congress, hostage, shotgun!
Yeah.
That might unnerve you.
A staff member for Jim DeMint tweeted, not funny. He's also a former Washington Times reporter. It was only a few weeks ago, they point out, that Anonymous hacked NBC's news Twitter account and started posting fake info about a terrorist attack. As for comment, the Capitol Police's public information officer, Sergeant Kimberly Schneider, passed on the statement, it has come to our attention that recent Twitter feeds are reporting false information concerning conditions at the U.S. Capitol. Conditions at the U.S. Capitol are currently normal. There's no credibility to these stories or the Twitter feeds. U.S. Capitol Police are currently investigating the reporting. I'm not sure what kind of investigating they need to do. It was The Onion.
I think that's threatening is what they mean.
Yeah. It's like
a lot of
investigating means saying, whose Twitter feed was it? Oh, it was The Onion.
I think they're investigating ways to
kneecap a guy?
To round them up and fire hose them without it being found out. That would just be my guess.
At least 13 deaths are now blamed on listeria-tainted cantaloupes in the deadliest outbreak of a foodborne illness in more than a decade. In addition, health officials say at least 72 people have become sick. Dr. Thomas Frieden, who heads the CDC in Atlanta, says one of the rare things about listeria is it can grow at low temperatures.
Even if it's in your refrigerator or in a refrigerated holding area, that bacteria can continue to grow and multiply, and the cantaloupe can become more infected, it can become more contaminated.
No one is safe from cantaloupe.
Frieden says it can take 1 to 8 weeks for those who've eaten the bad fruit to get sick.
If you have flu-like symptoms and fever with other symptoms, and you're older, if you're pregnant, or you have an underlying condition, such as cancer, or you're on immunosuppressive treatment, then see your doctor, and you can have your blood or stool cultured to see if you have listeria.
My stool is already cultured enough.
By the way, if you are unsure about whether or not you should eat cantaloupe, wash it off first. That's the thing. This listeria is one of those things. It's not inside the fruit. It's on the outside of the cantaloupe.
I shouldn't just lick the things in the produce aisle.
Yeah, and so if you don't get all hysterical and say, oh God, I can never eat cantaloupe again, just wash the damn thing
off.
Get
hysterical. You're all going to die. All right. Sorry.
Not the cantaloupe.
All right. And also, if you got cancer, it seems like you have bigger fish to fry. But, I mean, you can worry about it if you like. All right, here's Don Taylor at the, let's see, what time is it, by the way? It is 12:22. We got Science of the March coming your way in just a moment, then entertainment news later on today. Next hour at RickEmersonShow.com. We'll talk about two nights ago, fourth episode of the fourth season of Sons of Anarchy. Also, Taser Watch, Penis Watch, and more. That is all coming up at RickEmersonShow.com. Here is Don Taylor.
Let's do that science.
Hurrah! Here's your Science of the March. And by the way, speaking of science, don't forget, if you want to get this program later on the day, you can do it via iTunes, or you can get it as a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or at LegionOfNews.com. That's how you can do that. You can also take it with you as you travel about your daily affairs and business across this watery blue globe of ours. That's at mobile.cascadia.fm, mobile.cascadia.fm. That is this, your Science of the March here at Cascadia.fm.
Space exploration is changing, and the Kennedy Space Center is about to change along with it. NASA is planning a major facelift for the local rocket ranch that will prepare it for a launch huge government-built super rockets along with smaller commercial launchers. It'll look greener and more campus-like, with fewer links to the historic days of the past and more emphasis on the future. The Kennedy Space Center currently has an industrial look. Many of the buildings are around 50 years old. A study says it'll be cheaper to build new ones than to modify the old ones for future projects.
This is gay. You know what they should totally do? They should require that everybody at all of the NASA installations look just like they did in 1964.
Yeah.
Just all be full on like Ed Harris with the flat top and the horn rims and the pocket protector.
And the astronauts should just all walk around in those jumpsuits that
totally.
Say NASA on them all of the time.
These short sleeve white shirts, guys with like a slide rule working.
The ladies should all dress like Joan Holloway.
Yes, exactly. Pearls and heels aplenty. Imagine how much imagine the tourism business they could get if everything. I mean, and they could be doing like normal, like modern day work. But if it would like if they
but
just
if
had
they made all of the consoles look like they
exactly.
did in the '60s,
like if the uniform. If the interface and the uniform was such that it replicated the, you know, the sort of mission, the classic Apollo era, how much more tourism and how much more money? And think about the licensing opportunity. Like, think of the merch they could sell at that place. See, nobody ever asks me, Rick Emerson, how to handle these things.
Just a wall of fake UNIVAC computers that are constantly blinking and whirring and doing
with, like, tape going back and forth.
Yeah.
I mean, see, this is...
I would totally go there.
Because who wants to visit a thing that just looks like, you know, it just looks like a bunch of guys on laptops? No one.
So among the new projects is a gigantic new $10.5 billion rocket that will one day send astronauts on trips to asteroids and to Mars. And a new
That's a lie.
And a new spacecraft that will fit on top of the super rocket.
Such a lie. This is like you're reading a textbook from 1940.
The Kennedy Space Center will also take on a new role, running the program that will put astronauts and government cargo on privately built rockets and spaceships. To do all that, the government wants to build $200 to $300 million worth of buildings at the Space Center. That means the old headquarters will have to be torn down. The total building space will be cut in half from the current 900,000 square feet, replaced by more green space and a campus-like feel. Even roads and bridges on the Space Center will be replaced or rebuilt, and the launch pads as well. It's a 10-year project, and they don't even have renderings showing what it'll look like yet. But yeah.
And so somebody poses a question, which is...
I just want it to look like the Nike campus, apparently.
I mean, why is it cheaper to destroy the whole thing and build it again as opposed to just knocking out a wall? Or, you know, we need more space. You, move your desk closer to him.
I don't know.
All right, stupid government.
The first direct measurements of how Kenya's storied wildlife affects the growth of cattle that's shared with them, the savanna grazing land, finds both the expected downside and an unexpected upside. Livestock managers widely assume that wildlife competes with livestock for resources, according to Wilfred Odadi of Kenyon's Mapala Research Center and his colleagues. To test that assumption, the researchers monitored weight gain and other measures of cattle health on the savanna. A wildlife-linked dip did appear in the dry season, but a wildlife assist boosted cattle growth during the wet season. Actual data should inform tense conservation debates, this is all in the September 23rd
I don't
science.
Know what this story is about.
Basically, it's always been believed that that the wildlife in Kenya is competing with livestock, with the cattle that they raise for the natural resources there. That one is damaging the other. That maybe the natural wildlife is not giving the cattle enough to graze or vice versa. But they found that, yes, during the dry season, that is the case. But in the wet season, it's actually... more, it's actually better.
Okay,
apparently,
right.
The wildlife helps.
So the whole thing is a wash, basically.
Yes, right. Exactly. So they were wrong. Climate change could result in a planet full of cold-blooded runts. In a warming world, copepods, tiny crustaceans that make up the bulk of the ocean's animal plankton, could end up stunted. Copepods cope with warmer temperatures by maturing faster, but they don't grow as fast as they mature, so they end up runts. The same phenomenon, called the temperature size rule, affects most cold-blooded animals, so as the planet heats up, many animal sizes may go down. Researchers at the University of London examined the case of the incredible shrinking organisms in their journal, The American Naturalist. Lead author Andrew Hirst said, "We've shown that growth and development increase at different rates as temperatures warm. The consequences are that at warmer temperatures, a species grows faster, but matures even faster still, resulting in them achieving a smaller adult size. Since copepods are food for marine animals, for fish to whales, what happens developmentally to the shrimpy crustaceans could affect the entire ocean's food web. Decoupling of these rates could have important consequences for individual species and ecosystems," they said.
Okay, then.
So, climate change makes animals smaller.
FYI, apparently there's a little bit of skipping or stuttering or some sort of now it doesn't really work if I have the music going in the background.
Yeah.
I was trying to mimic the skipping and the stuttering there, but it's not convincing. If you're listening to the Cascadia.fm stream, apparently there's a little bit of kerfluzitz happening right now, but we're going to
Sorry.
Well, we're not going to do anything. We're just going to continue to do the show. And
not a lot we could do except, like, talk faster.
The thing is, I hear my voice in uninterrupted glory no matter what's happening with the computers, so that's really all that matters. It's as long as I can hear the mellifluous tones of my own speech, that's my day is set. I'm good. All right.
It's the smell of food that gets male fruit flies in a romantic mood, according to a new study exploring the sexual habits of the Drosophila melangaster. What may not be how it's actually pronounced.
Drosophila malingaster.
I hardly knew her. Okay. No, that doesn't work. When trying to woo an attractive female, the sexually excited male fruit fly becomes a kind of troubadour, playing a love song with one wing as it waltzes behind its object of desire. But what exactly provokes this courtly behavior has been a mystery. New experiments reported online September 28th in Nature show that removing the gene for an olfactory protein called IR84A makes male flies less apt to perform their song and dance. Found amid nerve cells that spur reproductive activity in fruit flies, the protein is primarily stimulated by two aromas, phenolactic acid and phenylacetyl, another one that starts with phenol. Strangely, these aphrodisiacal, thank you, are given off not by female flies, but by the fruit and plant tissues the flies eat and use for laying eggs. Most insects become amorously inclined when they sense sex pheromones. Coming from a potential mate, being turned on by the scent of food instead could provide an evolutionary advantage for a species whose newborn spends several days eating and growing before they leave home.
Well, this is like that thing that where you hear occasionally where, you know, it's like humans get turned on by the smell of, like, pencil eraser or something, just something weird, you know, or like sawdust.
Yeah, men are supposed to be
licorice or some crap.
Licorice, vanilla, and cinnamon.
Yeah, and so it's, you know, stuff that you wouldn't traditionally think of as being like a sexual scent or an arousal scent or whatever, but it's, I don't know what that has to do. I mean, maybe that's some sort of a, maybe it is similar to something that is produced in your brain from regular pheromones.
Richard Benton of the Center for Integrative Genomics in Lausanne, Switzerland, said, "Fruit fly larvae eat constantly, and they need a good supply of food to support the growth. So being sexually stimulated by food odors ensures that flies will couple near a nutrient source, enabling them to raise their offspring where the whole family will remain well-fed. Male fruit flies aren't guided exclusively by food odors, though. Benton says their reproductive circuitry is complex and responds to many different sensory cues. For example, randy flies will taste potential mates by touching them, acquiring information through contact pheromones. However, getting a whiff of fruit plays an essential role in driving their courtship behavior."
Seems like there's a joke with randy flies.
Yeah.
Like he would be like a reporter for...
Let's get a wrestler with huge eyes.
I was going to say Randy Flies would be my wrestling name, but then I didn't know why. It seemed correct, but I didn't know why it seemed correct. And so I felt like if I couldn't explain that joke, I shouldn't say it.
And finally, researchers at Tel Aviv University have given a rat an artificial brain part, the cerebellum, to restore lost functions, thereby ushering in the era of true brain-to-computer communication for humans. Maddie Mintz, professor of psychobiology, and his colleagues built a computerized cerebellum and linked it to an anesthetized rat whose own cerebellum was disabled. The cerebellum is the round, cue-ball-sized structure at the back of the brain that controls how messages get from the brain to the body and back again. Critically, it controls the timing of movement, which is why injuries to the cerebellum cause people to lose their balance or suffer motor control disorders. Mintz presented his work at the Strategies for Engineering Negligible Senescence Foundation meeting in Cambridge, England. Attaching the synthetic cerebellum to the rat, the scientists tried to condition it to blink at the sound of a tone. To get the rat to blink, they first fired a puff of air at the rat when the tone sounded, and then just sounded the tone. The experiment worked. The rat blinked when it heard the sound. When the synthetic cerebellum was disconnected, the rat could not learn the response. This means that they got the artificial cerebellum to receive information from one part of the brain and send it back to another. This is a big advance from previous brain-computer interfaces, such as prosthetic limbs or computer controls, which send information only one way.
We should do some sort of a blind taste test where we try to figure out, like, you know, one of these things is a real news story. One of these is from a crazy science fiction movie from 1952 in which science is evil and runs amok. And the people who perpetrate these things are obviously crazy. Which is this? Because, I mean, if that... Like, that is some full-on, that's like some full-on, like, Cabinet of Dr. Caligari nonsense there, where you're just, like, wiring together electrodes into the brains of rats and then teaching them to, because then the rat begins to learn exponentially, and then, you know, and then it ends with, like, some Tales from the Crypt twist where it's, yeah, like, humans are wired into something and a bell's being rung by a huge rat in a lab coat. Or maybe not. I mean, maybe not exactly like that. But I'm just saying, it just...
It's going to backfire because eventually our robot masters will use that to control our brains.
And I mean, really, and doesn't this just seem... This just seems a lot like when you're a kid and you're basically just sticking, like, grasshoppers and, like, red ants together to see who will win a battle.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, this is a variation
when
on
you're
that.
In high school and they show you that if you poke at the dead frog, its legs will jerk.
Yes.
That kind of thing.
Have you done that thing where you, the thing with the salt on the frog legs?
No, I haven't.
Okay. No. Me either.
No.
If you have a plate of frog's legs, as is sometimes served to you in a restaurant, if you sprinkle a lot of salt on them, they just twitch and do a little dance.
Yeah, you can see it on YouTube.
It's all creepy and unnerving. Sarah's seen it.
Hey, Sarah.
Hey, you've seen the thing with the twitching frog legs, right?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, that's right. And that squid that crawls off the plate after it's dead?
Okay,
yeah.
Yeah, that drove her right out of the room.
Good times.
Yeah.
All right.
That's all the science.
There's your Science on the March for, Thursday, September 29th, 2011. Thank you for joining us for that. Don't forget, you got your entertainment news coming up here in just a skosh. Later on, and by later on, I mean about, 40 minutes from now or so, the Rick Emerson radio program at rickemersonshow.com. That is at rickemersonshow.com. Today we're talking about the most recent episode of Sons of Anarchy, also Penis Watch, also the Taser Watch, also whatever the Sam Hill we want to do.
Because it's Thursday.
That's right. And Thursday is...
It's
the day before Friday, right, which...
We never did come up with a good way to describe the craziness that is Squirrely Thursday.
No. But really, it is a tabula rasa under which we can project whatever manner of amusement and entertainment we desire.
I am the table. I am the table.
I think that says it all.
The number of suicides in Oregon has continued to increase, and the number of Lifeline suicide calls has nearly doubled since 2008, according to Oregon Partnership.
Wait, this means the suicide hotlines are causing the suicides. Get rid of them all.
The statewide nonprofit fields more than 19,000 suicide calls a year and says the number of deaths rose from 581 in 2008 to 670 in 2010. I say, if they get 19,000 calls a year and only 670 people killed themselves, they're doing pretty damn good.
Well, you could, I guess now is that, but you said that's numbers up from what to
from 581.
When? Well, that's not a lot.
So it's
I mean,
a lot.
Really, I mean, it's, no, I mean, but, I mean, from 581 to what?
To 670.
Well, I mean, that's only just, 90.
Yeah.
That's only 20% increase.
Percentage-wise, though, that's kind of...
Well, I suppose. Yeah. These are trying times.
Leslie Storm, the clinical director of Crisis Line, says it's scary out there and it's very sad. Storm believes a number of factors play a role, including the economy. I think people thought things would be better right now, she said. People are scared. They're moving back in with their parents. Some of their parents don't have jobs, so there's this feeling of being a burden. There's an incredible contributing factor.
It seems like it would be too expensive to kill yourself most of the really effective ways now. Like, if you don't have a gun, I mean, for you, who can afford to buy a gun? If you don't have a gun, it's probably hard to steal a gun from somebody who has one.
Actually, one of the most effective ways, not that I'm suggesting anyone do this, mind you, because that would be wrong.
The bridge.
But no, the hibachi in the bathroom.
Oh, we call that going out Boston style.
Do we?
Because the guy from Boston killed himself that way.
Oh, it's really popular in Japan because there's, like, you know, everyone lives in these tiny little apartments and there are no, and they can't get guns and there's nowhere they can, like, hang themselves, you know, and there's no open spaces. So apparently in Japan they have, like, mastered the art of, like, asphyxiation by with the charcoal barbecue in the closed bathroom.
Yeah, no, that was Brad Delp's method of choice. So perhaps he picked it up while touring the Orient.
Maybe
a little something he picked up in the Far East.
It's nice to bring a little something back with you when you go on a trip,
along with a tiny gold mandolin. Yeah.
So the Oregon. This is terrible. I'm reading this story about it's sad that suicides are on the rise, and then we're just suggesting how people.
One must either laugh or cry, Don. Yeah. And I'm not much for crying.
So experts say warning signs of suicide, by the way, may include depression, change in mood, changes in behavior, eating, sleeping, or other habits, as well as drug and alcohol use.
Sealing yourself in a cloakroom with a barbecue.
If you notice red flags, talk to the person affected. Resources are available no matter how desperate times may seem. Life is a roller coaster, says Tracy Riley, a crisis intervention specialist. Hang in there and reach out and ask for help.
Hang in there.
Yeah, that was a bad choice of words. But the Oregon Partnerships Crisis Line is free and confidential. You can call 1-800-923-HELP. That's 923-HELP.
All right, so there's that.
Or you could just go get yourself a hibachi.
I'm not saying to do that, though. That would be...
I believe they have them at Walgreens.
No, that's not a... not a thing I could advocate, of course. No, and plus, I don't trust that the structural integrity of my house is such... Like, I'd have to seal the whole room in CDC draping. Yeah. Like, I don't... My house is all shifty, like the walls don't meet the ceiling correctly, and then there's just cracks all around the bathroom and whatever. Like, there's no room in my house that would be sufficiently airtight. All I would do.
And then Max is sneaky, so he would figure out how to get the door open, and then the dogs would eat your body.
No, he would just assume, like, that was the thing. I could never, like, I wouldn't even be able to pull it off because he would just figure, like, I was getting ready to get my grill on. And so he'd, like, be showing up with, like, you know, an apron and just, you know,
he just
okay.
burst into the room. And
what are we having?
Door. Yeah.
No, and so I would just end up, you know, and I would just be one of those guys who just drooled a lot, you know, and, like, was in and just, you know, had to eat through a straw for the rest of my life. You don't want to do that.
No, because that's the thing is you got to make sure you don't botch it, because if you botch it, things will be even worse than they were
really,
before.
Really, I think there are a few things less sexy than an unsuccessful suicide attempt. That really is, that's going to render you permanently uneffable.
Yeah.
Just FYI
no
for me to you.
No one wants that.
Yeah.
So, Shane Pierce of Covington, wherever the town of Covington is. I'm not sure where that is. He returned to his apartment after having a toe amputated and found the man he was sponsoring in Alcoholics Anonymous drinking alcohol in his apartment. When Pierce tried to kick Leslie Hahn and his son Robert Hahn out of his apartment, the elder Hahn beat him with an aluminum baseball bat and table leg until he died. Leslie Hahn, 47, has a long history of mental problems and a lengthy criminal record. He's charged with murder. His son, 19, is charged with complicity to murder and tampering with evidence. Pierce's body was found September 20th inside the first floor apartment. The upstairs neighbors told police they had heard a loud fight the night before.
Now, did the Hahn duo confess all this to the cops?
I guess so. Police interviewed the father and the son, and Robert Hahn told police his father had beat Pierce and then ordered him to throw the bat and table leg into the sewer. Police were not able to find the bat. Were able to find the bat, but they could not find the table leg. Pierce, 54, often took in people that needed help, said his sister. She said her brother was not an alcoholic, but participated in Alcoholics Anonymous in order to help others. He became Leslie Haas' sponsor and allowed him to stay with him. Hahn had been participating in Kenton County's Mental Health Court, a jail diversion program for people with mental problems, after pleading guilty to stealing two cars earlier this year. He'd been diagnosed with numerous problems, including having hallucinations, delusions, depression, antisocial personality disorder, and schizophrenia.
Seems like booze is the least of your problems there. They make it sound as though he just bludgeoned the guy because he got into his Johnny Walker Black or whatever.
Yeah, eventually, and this was also a guy, he was kicked out of a drug and alcohol treatment facility.
That really is saying something.
Yes. So this guy Pierce, who served more than 20 years in prison for burglary, had recently worked at a metal recycling facility and apparently like just wanted to help folks. He hurt his foot and had to have his toe amputated and spent a week in the hospital. And apparently, yes, got back from a week in the hospital, found these guys drinking in his apartment, tried to get them to leave. Guy called him, was called a punk, and then he was beaten to death with a baseball bat.
This is why I try not to help people.
No.
I go out of my way to not aid
anyone
or assist anyone.
No.
That just ends badly. That never benefits anybody at all.
As a follow-up on a story from yesterday, authorities have arrested 7 people in alleged SAT cheating scam at a Long Island, New York high school and are investigating whether the cheating extends to other schools. Prosecutors allege 19-year-old Samuel Eshagoff impersonated 6 different students between 2010 and 2011, charging between $1,500 and $2,500 to take the SAT test for them. Nassau County District Attorney Kathleen Rice said Eshagoff delivered results, and that's what the teens were looking for.
He scored on every single one of those tests in the 97th percentile. So there was a reason why these kids were paying him. They wanted good scores on their SATs.
I would totally do this. If only I were smart enough, and if I were able to somehow pull it off, and if I was young and fresh-faced, I would absolutely do this sort of a thing.
Take the test or pay for the test?
Well, both. Well, I mean, whatever side of the equation. I seem better suited for the paying someone to take take the test for me, but that ship has sort of sailed. I mean, not that, you know, and I'm just too dumb for the other one. I'm just saying if I had that kind of a Look, people who are intelligent, they find a way to make that work to their advantage. Really, if you are smart enough to see cracks in the system, you're smart enough to be allowed to use them, in my opinion. I mean, really, who's being hurt by this? Because because you got to assume, like, if you think that somebody's being hurt by this, then you have to really honestly believe that the SATs are indicating how smart you are, which I think we all know isn't the case anyway. So
it can be argued that because colleges do heavily weight SAT scores for admissions, it could be argued that these people are screwing somebody who actually did take the test and scored well on it out of a possible college admission.
Well, I suppose.
That they deserved.
Well, you know. I guess, except,
on the
know.
Other hand, though, I mean, I agree with you. I grew up with sort of, unfortunately, being taught the unfortunate attitude by my parents and my school that education wasn't really about learning. It was about scoring well.
Right.
It was about getting the grades. And when you teach people that, what you do is teach them it's okay to pay someone to write a paper for you or take a test for you. Because it's results-oriented and it's not about actual education.
I mean, I get your whole thing that it's like a theft of services, basically, because there's somebody else who's going to have to go to their backup school instead because they didn't get into whatever. But, I mean, I guess I'm saying in a philosophical sense, it seems like the only reason you would be really irritated by this is if you put a lot of faith in the tests anyway, which I think you would be foolish to do. Anyway, I think that, like, whoever it is that was... Now, who... was it a guy that was taking the test?
Yes.
And he was doing, like, a gender-neutral name sort of thing?
Yeah, it was five guys and then one girl whose name was probably, like, Kelly or something like that.
Oh, so there was, like, a whole...
Way.
So was one guy the ringleader and he had this whole, like, Ocean's 11 team that was testing?
No, he was a 19-year-old guy. He took tests for six different people.
Oh, so it wasn't, like, six people. I thought he was, like, the Clooney and he had this whole team of test takers that was, like, they were testing. That's what he ought to do. He should have gotten, like, an Herbalife downline. Where he had, like, people underneath him, and then they had people underneath him, and then they could have just been, they could have been testing around the clock for, scores.
That's
imagine
true.
How much money they could have made.
Yeah.
I think he himself ought to get a full-ride scholarship to whatever college he wishes to attend, because clearly he's resourceful and intelligent.
He's smarter than any of these people.
Honestly. Yeah, that's... I mean, that really is... And plus, I mean, if you got the money just to be thrown to a guy, And if you've got the money to be thrown to a guy to take your SATs, and if you're just craven enough to do it, you probably are going to end up being successful regardless. So it's not like you really need his help to get into the college anyway. I mean, because you're just going to shiv somebody on your way to the top regardless.
Well, this district attorney woman says that rumors spurred an investigation into the scores of the six students.
They compared them to their GPA, and there was a huge discrepancy with these six students.
I see.
Who had mediocre GPAs, but they scored in the 97th percentile. So that was a big red flag.
All right. Well, so there's that.
Okay. Let's do some entertainment news.
Here's your... I keep meaning to go... I guess I can't really do it now, but I am occasionally tempted to go back and take... Because I never took an SAT or anything, and I'm occasionally tempted to go back and take the SAT just to sort of see. Except that I'm afraid that it would show that I'm just deeply stupid. Uh-huh. I'm just so afraid that it would show that I just... That I'm not even clinically alive. That I'm like a houseplant that can talk or something. Like, seriously, like, if I took an IQ test or whatever, and what if it just said that, like, I had an IQ of 12?
Well, the thing about taking the SAT now is you are so far removed from school, you would do horribly in it. When you take the SAT at the end of high school, I mean, you still probably have enough of that stuff, the history and the English and the math, still, like, kind of teetering around in your head. Plus, then you study specifically for the SAT.
Yeah.
But it's like, now, I wouldn't even attempt it because I wouldn't know any of these things.
I might actually do better on it now than I did, than I would have done at the end of high school. Because it's like in high school, not only did I not learn, it's like I actively went out of my way to block information coming into my head, like with other things. Like I would just, like if I saw math knowledge entering my brain, I would try to head it off at the pass with like a Led Zeppelin album or something. And just, I would immediately memorize something stupid. What are the top 10 videos on Dial MTV for this entire year? Go. And I would put that in.
So
like to head off the Revolutionary War knowledge from taking root.
So it's not that different from now.
It's exactly. Well, I was prepping for this job even then, really. Mm-hmm. Here's your entertainment news for Thursday, September 29th.
Easy E's son says there's a high probability he'll play his famous father in an upcoming Hollywood movie about the legendary rap group N.W.A., he told TMZ, "I'm the perfect man for the role." Eric Wright Jr., a.k.a. Lil Eazy-E, said he's very excited that Noon Line Cinema is moving forward with the film, which is set to be produced by Eazy's former N.W.A. group member Ice Cube.
That's who, really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Who better to play him in the NWA days? Lil Easy said, adding, like father, like son, no makeup needed. The 27-year-old, who's trained with an acting coach in the past...
Oh, my God. He's 27?
Yes.
I am ancient. I'm 1,000 years old. I'm half dust.
He says he's already been in contact with the movie producers, but has yet to formally audition. Wright was only 11 years old when Easy died back in 1995, but he said, I know I'm just like my dad.
Wow. All right.
Courtney Love has a book deal with William Morrow. Morrow is an imprint of HarperCollins Publishers. It announced today that Love will set the record straight. Her memoir will address life with Kurt Cobain, the Nirvana leader who died in 1994, her drug problems, and her Hollywood career. The memoir is currently untitled and scheduled to come out next fall. She's among several musicians who recently agreed to write memoirs. These include Neil Young, Pete Townsend, Carole King, and Greg Allman. Michael Jackson's personal assistant testified at the trial of Jackson's Dr. Conrad Murray. Michael Amir Williams says Murray wanted to retrieve something from Jackson's house the day he died. This is one.
This is Jackson 1, is the name of this? All right, hold on a second. Let's see.
He said that there's some cream that he wouldn't want the world to know about. And he requested that I or someone give him a ride back to house to get it so the world, you know, wouldn't know about the cream.
To get the cream so the world wouldn't know about it?
Yes, sir.
There's some cream
that I don't want the world to know about.
Read the setup again, if you would.
He is Michael Jackson's personal assistant.
Okay.
He said Conrad Murray wanted to retrieve something from Jackson's house the day he died.
Sorry, I left my future at Michael Jackson's in his bedroom. If you could just put it in the bed.
I left my magical cream next to his bed.
My career is there. If you could just put it in a valise of some kind. A cream. So this belonged to Conrad Murray.
Yes.
Or not. It's not Mike. In other words, he wasn't trying to protect Michael Jackson from embarrassment. That ship seems to have sailed.
No, he was trying to protect himself, I guess.
Let me just.
He said that there's some cream that he wouldn't want the world to know about. And he requested that I or someone give him a ride back to house to get it so the world, you know, wouldn't know about the cream.
To get the cream so the world wouldn't know about it?
Yes, sir.
It's their as of yet unreleased Live at Budokan session. He's hoping to hold out for the top dollar. All right. Is there any explanation given anywhere about the nature of the cream?
I'm trying to find out. I don't think so, no.
Okay.
Williams says he put Jackson's house on lockdown the day he died.
With Michael Jackson just dying, and the chaos, and the phone calls I'm getting.
And the cream.
I wouldn't think someone coming asking to go back to the house.
And whatnot.
And I didn't know the law, but from what I did know, I didn't think no one was allowed back in the house after something like that happened.
All right, so, well, first of all, I mean... I like the idea that there's just something, like on lockdown, I love the idea that maybe there's just like a big red, like you break a little window and there's a red button and a go-ooga thing and, you know, and a guy, you know, you get on the intercom and like steel shutters just slam closed everywhere and just like it, like a moat, like a portcullis comes down and like a drawbridge lifts up or something. There's no, I'm still back on the cream thing, frankly. I'm not even really thinking about this soundbite. I'm just back on the...
He said that there's some cream that he wouldn't want the world to know about. And he requested that I or someone give him a ride back to house to get it so the world, you know...
I'm sorry, I left some cash rules everything around me back at the... if you could just... Under the...
About the cream.
To get the cream so the world wouldn't know about it?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Well, police did find, something like 35 tubes... of two different kinds of creams that are used for vitiligo, which is the uneven skin tone.
So it might be Jackson's medicine, if that's what he's talking about, not his.
Well, yeah, but he's his doctor, though, so he prescribed it to him.
Oh, see, I thought it was like Conrad Murray's, like he had like a, I don't know, he had like some like penis extension cream or something he was slathering on himself after Jackson went to bed every night.
I think what they're trying to prove is that... that Murray delayed calling the police after
to clean
Jackson
the joint out.
Well, also he's trying to conceal evidence that he'd been giving him doses of a surgical anesthetic,
that propofol stuff.
Yeah,
yeah.
And so I think they're trying to say that is the cream that he was going back to get.
That's not really a cream so much as it is a. I think that's just a huge. I think that's just a needle full of crap they jam into you.
Yeah. Maybe the I don't know what. Why would they be? He'd be smearing. I don't understand.
See,
the cream.
I totally thought.
I want to know more about the cream.
I didn't even get that it was Jackson's. I totally thought that like part of the nighttime ritual was, you know, it takes Jackson like, you know, after Jackson drifts off to sleep after you've read him Goodnight Moon or whatever. What are you supposed to do for the long hours till morning? I know I'll slather myself with some sort of emollient. Just to while away the nighttime hours until morning.
Of course, this is Michael Jackson, too. So it's like, it could be some kind of cream that was made from the spleens of white tigers or something. And so that's why he had to get it, because it's like, you know, made from some sort of exotic animal that it's illegal to kill or something. Who knows?
Anus wasn't bleached quite white
enough. Yeah, so. Artie Lang's return to radio is paying off for him and his partner, Nick DiPaolo. The two will rake in apparently a total of about $3 million. They just signed three-year deals for a nationally syndicated radio show premiering on October 3rd. Sources involved with the deal say each of them will make more than $500,000 per year. It's going to be called The Nick and Artie Show.
That really is, that's groundbreaking. Do they say, is it going to be a terrestrial radio show or satellite or online? Or?
It's going to be on the Audience Network, which I guess is an internet radio thing. DirecTV put together the deal, so I guess DirecTV has...
Well, it might be satellite,
some
then.
Kind of a satellite deal. The show will focus on sports entertainment. Artie's already describing it as, imagine two hosts from SportsCenter if they were under indictment.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. They're getting a whole lot of money for that.
I just, you know, I don't dislike Artie Lang or whatever, but it seems like that I would be leery of putting any money into any sort of enterprise...
With Artie Lang.
It seems like that might be a bit of a short sell. That might be, you might not, that might not come to full maturity in terms of your dividend revenue.
Unless you, like, gamble by also taking out a huge insurance policy on him.
Totally. That's covering both sides of the street, as it were.
Yeah.
Okay, no, that makes sense. I could see that.
Warner Brothers is launching a web series on Facebook that will personalize the show for viewers. The show is called Aim High. It's an action comedy series about a student who doubles as a government operative by night. The studio is calling it the first social series from a Hollywood studio on the site. Viewers will be able to integrate their Facebook profile into background elements of the series. Users could see their name appear as graffiti in one scene or their face on a poster in another. Aim High will debut October 18th on Facebook. It stars Jackson Rathbone, Amy Teagarden, and Greg German. And that's all the entertainment news.
The end of entertainment
that's
news?
That's the end of entertainment
news. All right. There is your entertainment news for, let's see, this is for Thursday, September 29th, 2011. Don't forget the Rick Emerson radio program is coming up next hour. That is at rickemersonshow.com. rickemersonshow.com today. Taser Watch, Penis Watch. We'll talk about the most recent episode of Sons of Anarchy. That is season 4, episode 4, and more. Don't forget, you can get that at rickemersonshow.com. This program can be gotten later on today in its entirety via iTunes, if you like, or as a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or at legionofnews.com. You can also take it with you if you like on your mobile device. It's mobile.cascadia.fm. mobile.cascadia.fm. How was yesterday's episode of Ham-Fisted Radio?
It was delightful. Thank you very much. We had a very good time. Talking about the difference between addiction and just a lack of self-control, which was inspired by the fact that Betsy Richter gave me a bottle of some kind of homemade hooch that she created with peaches and spices and a whole lot of high-octane, like, bourbon.
Okay.
And it was quite delicious. And then I had to, like, put it away because I was... just kept drinking it, and that led to us to talking about, you know, my lack of self-control issues.
Okay,
you can hear that at hamfistedradio.com if you want to hear a little bit about me being crazy. Or here on Cascadia.fm, there is a show page, and you can find it there.
If that seems like the sort of thing you're into. We got, what, 42 seconds here.
Well, new results show a slight drop in public transportation by commuters in Portland, but a strong showing for people commuting by bike. Still, automobiles rule the Portland commuting scene in a metro area that prides itself in developing and promoting the use of alternate transportation. The U.S. Census Bureau data for 2009 shows public transportation commute ridership for the Portland-Vancouver-Beaverton metro area at 6.1%, down from 6.3% in 2008. Los Angeles actually beat out Portland with a 6.2% rate in 2009. TriMet is blaming the tough economic times that created service cutbacks and fewer people with jobs to get to for the dip in the commuter percentage rate. But it also says the statistic doesn't take into account people who use mass transit to go places other than work. TriMet's Mary Fetch said, when you think about the transit system, it's part of the character of our community. You couldn't imagine this region without it. Also, one critic of TriMet says their transportation plans and spending says developing light rail is driving away customers. John Charles of the Cascade Policy Institute said, putting in light rail that goes to very few places by its very nature is irrelevant to customers that live all over the region. It's the bus system that uses the ubiquitous road system, and that's where future growth is.
And on that exciting note, we end this, another episode of Legion of News. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milkpacking District in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. Thank you for listening. We will see you again tomorrow, that is Friday at noon, for another episode of Legion of News. We'll see you next hour at RickEmersonShow.com. Until then, have a safe and satisfying Thursday, won't you?